Okay, Green Data Center Podcast, Season 4, Episode 6. Okay, please like and subscribe this episode. Also, we are looking for feedback, so if you've got any, feel free to reach out to us. The easiest way to do that is to go to the website, greendatacenterman.com. We've got a lot of things that are revamped on the website as well, including upcoming events. Now, there's a huge one, the USGBC Net Zero in Los Angeles. That's just days away. And it's going to be huge, and there's a lot to see there, a lot to take in, and a lot to learn. Highly recommend if you've not been. Another one that's more localized is the DC Connects, and that is in Northern Virginia. It's a place to be if you're going to have a data center. And of course, that's the event to attend if you're going to be part of that community. We still have the links to our courses if you're looking to dive into the data center industry, so go ahead and click there for the cheapest courses possible. All right, I wanted to start out with the website, the IEA.org. IEA stands for the International Energy Agency. Now, right on their front page, they've got all sorts of nice information, and you can dial down into some of the other regions like Europe, Africa, you know, North America, etc. But what they show is some of those numbers that can be surprising, and they show it on a nice chart or two, including the electricity final consumption, and that's in terawatt hours. And right now, as of 2019, that's the latest data that they have published here on these particular charts, we're looking at 25,027.28 terawatt hours in 2019. Along with that, they also publish the percentage change, and you can use a slider to just, you know, look at the amount of percentage change from 1990. So if you're looking from 1990 to, say, the year 2000, what do we have? We have about a 29%, almost 30% increase over the 1990 numbers. Now, in order to go from, say, like 2000 to that 2019 number, you have to do your own calculations to figure that out. So I went ahead and looked at that and took a few numbers down and did a quick calc, and basically from the year 2000 to 2010, there was an increase of about 40% on the amount of electricity rise over that time. Now, what's interesting is everyone has been chasing after data centers and their energy consumption over time for years now, but it should be noted that the data center energy consumption estimated has been relatively flat year by year since about the year 2010. Now, I've been taking a look at a number of studies to be sure about that, because it's sort of, I thought we were creeping up by at least 1% or 2% per year just for the data center industry overall energy use. But relatively, it can be hard to measure, but it has plateaued. And in every one of those studies that you take a look at, even since the year 2010, when we really started to take a look at this in earnest on the global energy use, just specifically for the data center industry, there have been significant strides in efficiency, and the total energy use of data centers has remained flat because even though the demand for those services and that data and everything continues to expand, there have been massive moves away from smaller and less efficient data centers, and everybody started to really understand and use that metric PUE, and they moved to larger, more efficient data centers or just started using more efficient equipment. The other significant part to this is what was happening in the IT equipment. So it's not all about the facility. It's how the efficiency of the servers, the storage devices, and the network switches, etc. There were huge developments, and you saw a lot of server virtualization and other methods that were just looking at optimizing that IT equipment and using it more efficiently. If you take a look at some of the nameplate data of even what the maximum nameplate data for the amount of power draw that they might have, and then the minimum, you saw that minimum go down substantially as well. So if there was an idling server, instead of, you know, consuming 20, 30% of the total server power, it was suddenly consuming much, much, much less. Add in things like hypervisors and other controllability aspects, and suddenly you could operate your servers much more efficiently than before. And it bears repeating about virtualization. It really started to take off, especially once people wrap their minds around it and what it could provide. And suddenly you had the same amount of racks and servers deployed, and suddenly you could deploy many more virtualized servers. So people were talking about, can we get 10 times the amount of virtualized servers? 20, 30, 50, 80, that kind of thing. And that was happening all over the place. So everybody was starting to realize the benefits of that and started to move that way pretty fast. Now, because of all of that, that really flatlined the amount of power consumption that data centers had, especially over that decade from about 2010 to 2020. Now, the IEA has their own methods of pulling that data together, and they do a lot of aggregation bottom-up data for how much the global data center industry has for the energy use. From that and their information, it is estimated that it's about 192 to 194 terawatt hours per year. And that has remained, again, that's remained pretty steady since 2010 or so. Now, during 2010, that represented about 1% of the global electricity consumption annually. And that was measured to be around 19,850. So it was a little bit less than 1%. And with the amount of electricity consumption that increased, again, up to that 25,000 terawatt hours per year, and with data centers still only pulling, say, about 194 terawatt hours, even call it 200 terawatt hours per year, that means that the actual energy use declined from about that 1% to about 0.7%. So if you're playing with the verbiage and the numbers, you could say that the overall electricity demand of data centers has remained about the same, but the overall comparison of use to the rest of the world has decreased. Yes, that's one way of putting it, but we have to realize that these energy and efficiency gains that were seen over that last decade or so, we are still building data centers at an increasing rate faster than before, and the efficiency gains that we had once had, we have slowed down on those. So we're probably going to see that we're at the little bit of the dip or the lull in that amount of energy use, and it is likely to go ahead and keep increasing from here. So even if you think about, say, a data center that you might have seen with a PUE of, say, 1.75, and you manage to get that PUE down to 1.5, good work so far. And the thing is, to get it from that 1.5 to, say, a 1.25 is going to take a considerable more investment, likely more investment and considerable study in order to bring it down that extra 0.25 on a PUE number. Now, if you think about that overall, that means that you're increasing your efficiency, but you have diminishing returns by effect. That diminishing returns is starting to happen because we're seeing a lot of those hyperscale data centers are having those PUEs of 1.1 or 1.05, whatever they're saying, and depends, you really have to scrutinize those numbers. But whenever you're looking at those more efficient data centers and you're moving everything towards them and out of those smaller and less efficient data centers, that's great. But we're starting to lose the number of data centers that we can shut down that are less efficient. And we're starting to see that those large hyperscale data centers, the number of them getting built and built for those demands and those services, that is increasing. And that's why we're likely to see that total power increase start to creep up here in the next decade or so. Now, the traditional data center energy use has plummeted. It's decreased by over 50% since 2010. And those hyperscale data centers, their energy use has quadrupled. Although, if you, again, I'll mention that the total data center energy use has flatlined, right? So all those traditional data centers were that inefficient that the amount of energy that they have their energy essentially over the last decade or so, and the hyperscale and more efficient data centers were able to quadruple the amount of energy that they could use dedicated to them and still not affect that total data center energy use globally. Now, there's a lot of things that helped out with those hyperscalers being able to do that, including like the utilization and the densities and so on. But I was also curious about that jump in that efficiency over such a short time frame. And no other building type out there has had such a jump in efficiency over a shorter time frame than any other building type. So it was really fascinating to start to see that come out through those numbers when you start looking at any other building type. And I am talking about hospitals or office spaces, those kinds of building types. And even the high performance buildings, we're not seeing them being applied to a given industry as a whole as much as they are to data centers. And a lot of that is just attributed to that general shift again towards those hyperscalers and moving to the cloud and saying we don't need to have our own data center to operate, we can let somebody else do this for us, and therefore we can be much more efficient, and overall it leads to a total efficiency, not just for that company, but for that area and for that overall business and, of course, the data centers themselves. And if you explore a lot of the IEA.org website, you can see that there's a lot of other things. They look into data transmissions and the efficiencies that have been gained there as well. And you can find some charts where they show like the number of global power purchase agreements by volume, and they compare like technology and communications with others. And technology and communication is about 45% or so of those total power purchase agreements by volume. And you can look at the different corporate groups, who's at the top, the bottom, etc., and what they're doing to offset their total energy use by gaining in renewables. From there, they also have some nice links, such as how some of these companies are doing this. And some of them are looking at their 2030 targets that they're looking to have, such as zero carbon electricity on a 24/7 basis. And they're doing that by using or shifting their loads based on the times and regions. So if they're looking at what's going to be more efficient for them, and maybe they have solar that can go ahead and help out with doing a lot of those processing, say of weather data or whatever the demand might be, they can go ahead and apply like a machine learning algorithm to move those loads around to the data centers and such, and not necessarily worry about the data transmission for that. That's not where the electricity is lost. It's about in that compute and such. And they're looking to understand, well, what's going to be more efficient and what's the time frame for this? Because if you think about, connecting North America to, say, Asia, just to take advantage of the efficiency of the Asian data center, that might be worthwhile on the energy side, but what about the timing side? So if you can stand however many hundred milliseconds downtime or additional time that adds to that, maybe that's totally possible. But you also have to look at the amount of data that you're looking to go ahead and use as well. So all of that, of course, you plug all that information into a machine learning. To me, that's a perfect example of what you'd want to set up for that and have that AI supervise it and go ahead and run with it and then spit out the data at the end. And then what I'm looking forward to is whenever that is doing that, the machine learning is saying, well, if we had processed it at our original data center, it would have been this amount of energy. We optimized that and we saved whatever it is, 8%, 18%. That data is going to be magical. And in order to just see that and the numbers behind it and that it's very transparent is going to be great to see in the future. So I had somebody reach out to me about data center jobs, and they noticed that across the technology sector, there's been a lot of job non-growth. In other words, a lot have been stalled, or they're just not hiring, or they've had an interview and it just goes nowhere from there. And that's across a lot of the major tech firms. And a lot of them will have announced like that they might be doing a little bit of internal growth or however they want to call it, where they're not necessarily hiring new talent, and they might be looking for some attrition to actually happen in some of those different groups. Now, what I've seen across the data center sector is, of course, the demand, the need for more people that understand data centers across the board, and that is dealing with either the servers and the technology that's running them themselves inside the data centers, or on the facility side, those data center operators, as well as the design teams and everyone that's involved on data centers overall. Now, I need to add an asterisk to that to say that this is a limited view. I've got blinders, of course, just as everyone does in what the industry is doing. But across the board, it seems like there is a lot of demand and we're seeing a lot of growth with the different groups, and they are either growing like an education group and they are looking to do data center training and certifications for certain things. And that keeps growing, as well as some of the courses at universities and other places that have reached out and branched out to train people up in the realm of data centers. And that's, again, across the board. for all sorts of different aspects for what you're looking to do for a data center. And there's a lot of jobs out there that you might need to take specific training for. And that training can either be done externally, or you can aim to be hired and point to a certain training that you would want to do, saying, this is where I know my weaknesses. You hired me for this position. I can do, you know, 50% or 75% of it, but I need that training to make sure that I don't struggle on the job, that I can do it efficiently and not have to worry, you know, about making mistakes. And that's the big thing that, of course, everyone in the data center industry wants is no mistakes. You need to keep that data center up and operating. So if you know where your weaknesses are, that's great. And I would say just go ahead and reach out and get training across the board wherever you can find it. Now, a lot of people have been saying, be prepared for the downturn in the economy and such, just because the interest rate hikes in the United States have been happening. And all that's fine. You can prepare for that to try to slow the inflation. And to me, you can look to ride that out sort of in that data center industry, but I wouldn't even say ride it out. Just make it your career, and you'll probably be locked in for doing something into the future just because it is such a growth industry. There might be some short sellers or analysts that are looking at it and saying that the data center industry overall might have a weakness here or there. Of course, again, I can't see everything. But the overall picture looks like you're going to be able to ride things out no matter what happens over the next year or so. Now, of course, there's a lot of analysts out there saying be prepared for that downturn when it starts to really happen. Well, it looks to be pretty steady. And to me, the data center industry is on the other path. It's pretty steady growth. And therefore, that industry is probably going to keep continuing, especially as we look for the chip manufacturers to start to ramp up and actually produce the amount of chips that are required, not just for data centers, but across the different industries. And of course, everything that's generating that information, it's going to want to be processed by and live in a data center somewhere as well. Okay, enough doom and gloom about the financial forecasts, and I'll stop reading some of those finance websites and latest articles. And just stick to data centers here. Okay, back to green data centers. I'd like to point to Flex Central and their green finance framework. They're launching a number of data centers and facilities this year as well as next, and their growth is spurred by their green finance framework. In other words, everything that they're doing is along the sustainability with their design and their operating. And their latest one that they're looking to do is in Oregon, and it's in Hillsboro, where they're already located, but they're doing an expansion there. And they're teaming with T5, which is helping them develop and build the facility. And that's kind of one of their normal things that they do in a lot of their markets. And they're in 19 different markets across the United States. But they are really launching into the sustainability on design. And this particular facility has a zero water use. In other words, they're not using any water in order to cool the data center. And this isn't the only bit of news about Flex Central. They are actually on the front cover of Interglobics magazine, and they have a nice spread in the middle of the magazine that shows a lot of what they've been doing, a lot of their leadership and teamwork and sustainability efforts. So they are making some nice moves, and it's great to see, you know, in the markets and everything that they're in, that they're going ahead with those improvements along the sustainability measures overall. Okay, let's talk about the data center growth and overall demand and what's driving that. Well, one of those is just information. Now, there's been some different reports and such, and one of those is IDC, and they had a projection of about 33 zettabytes in 2018, and they're increasing to 175 zettabytes by 2025. Well, we're closer to 2025 than 2018, and that means we're probably well on our way at 150 zettabytes or more, and that's approximate, right? Now, a lot of that data, though, is just data that's collected, and nothing is happening with it. Not analyzed, nobody's pulling any information out of it. Well, of course, everybody wants to know why. Well, that's because we lack some of that computing power. And that's where already some of those computing driven technologies are starting to look at that and say, how can we achieve both that power that's required and the efficiency that's needed too? Enter in quantum computing and other technologies that are ramping up. But in the meantime, we are not there quite yet to have large scale deployments of them. Instead, we're probably likely to use a lot of the same technologies we've been looking at, but we're starting to look at how we can apply AI and machine learning to go ahead and understand how those data centers are operating, and also not just how the facilities are operating, but what are those workloads that are operating? How can we get that to operate at a more efficient rate as well? The reason for that, of course, has been the heat waves that we've seen. And those heat waves are striking North America, Europe right now. You've heard about California had their heat wave where they're basically very energy constrained. And Europe, of course, with London and other places. And of course, we don't want to forget what has happened with some of the data centers coming down or being offline due to the extreme weather. We need to learn from that and learn how to pivot to understand what the workloads are going to be, as well as what can we do about that? What can we do to offset those loads or demands? Now, some of the technologies that you might have seen that can handle, say, an increase in switching frequency or other improvements or efficiency gains, they might be deployed in those data centers where we have those higher temperatures, especially if you're going to say, how do we lower those cooling requirements? How do we get this chip, this server to operate without having any issues with an increase on the total temperature of the data center itself? So if you have a gallium nitride or other type of semiconductor that's going to be deployed and can handle an increase on those temperatures or operate even higher, let's see what we can do to deploy them in those data centers that might be at risk first. And then we can look to more of tune the rest of the systems and components as they're operating to understand where were their limits and how were those limits pushed? When did they start to ramp down? In other words, reduce their compute based on the temperature alone. Now, we'd also talked about moving the loads as well. So if one of those tech companies realizes that they can get a machine learning algorithm to take a look at what's that compute power going to actually take to operate in this particular data center, and it might be efficient to do that, but if they look at those restrictions on that overall heat, they need to take that as an input, right? And say, what are the cooling systems? What are the overall loads? What are those limits there? And put that as a parameter in order to say, well, maybe we move 40% of this load to one of the Nordic states and look at that as that processing. Or they move it, you know, to some other more efficient place or where they're gaining more renewables and can be done and do not risk anything on the temperature, let alone that overall efficiency on the compute power. And it's okay to go ahead and look at that and do predictability, but you also need to have that continuous monitoring of the health of the total system itself. You have to look at everything that's involved in doing that compute power and realize that at the micro level, or basically that chip level or the server levels, and be able to aggregate a lot of that to say, well, we are failing or we have the potential to fail in certain areas of the data center. In other words, the whole data center might not go down, but there's certain aspects where you might have to turn down the amount of compute that you have just because of the heat that's going to be gained from it. What does that mean? Where can we offload that? Where can we put it instead? And of course, learning from that in real time and then learning how to offset that compute to another data center entirely. Now, it's all well and good in order to predict that and take some preemptive action, you know, before a failure happens or anything like that, and you're reducing your server downtimes. But the way that data centers operate is they tend to operate on, some people call it a hockey stick kind of curve, where you have this where suddenly the heat just is out of control, or you might call it a mushroom, however you want to look at it. It is basically an exponential growth of that amount of heat, and suddenly you can't dissipate it fast enough. And by the time you figure that out, it's too late. So we need something that's going to say we have the potential to fail this data center, fail this room, fail these components, or these servers need to ramp down and limit their capacity. Well, before any of that happens, what are those potential limits? How can we go ahead and push the data center to be as efficient as possible and yet take off some of that load and move it elsewhere to reduce that risk? And of course, we need to add a little bit of a buffer there to make sure that we don't risk pushing things too much towards the envelope there. Now, to look at the heat waves a little bit more closely for what happened in London, there's been a lot of diagnosis on what happened back in July, and we had multiple data centers that basically started to go down, or they would start to reduce their services, including Oracle's, Google, Microsoft also said that they had limited capacity on their servers, basically from a worldwide aspect based on what was happening in London. But it was Oracle's and Google's data centers that actually went down, and they acknowledged that there was issues with their cooling systems, and it was because they weren't likely able to handle the 104 degree Fahrenheit, 40 degrees Celsius that was happening in the UK at the time. And there was a lot of things that happened in the UK. A lot of people were alarmed. They don't normally see temperatures like that spike that high. And of course, there were a lot of fires. There's a lot of outages. It wasn't just data centers. And there was a lot of electricity demand for cooling, of course, as well. Now, whenever those outages did happen, you lost some of the services that they're able to provide, like the cloud services. And even WordPress said that, hey, our web hosting service, which, you know, held by Google in the area, their outage was our outage. So they looked squarely to Google to their solutions, and Google did not provide at that particular time in that area. So WordPress was out. And of course, this wasn't just something that lasted, 15 minutes or so. This was hours. And of course, hours can turn into days. But they were able to bounce back once they were able to get control of their cooling systems and understand where they could ramp up, and instead of shutting some of their servers down and such in order to prevent overheating which might damage equipment, they decided to go ahead and risk elevated temperatures for a little bit of time there. And even the next day, when the temperatures did ramp up again, they were able to still keep capacity online. Now, of course, that's a risk whenever you're taking a risk like that and you're keeping your services operating at, say, an extended temperature. There are oftentimes automatic temperature limits that will go ahead and ramp down the equipment to prevent damage to the machines themselves. And if you damage the machines themselves, you're risking an extended outage. We're talking days to weeks there, depending on where they can offset the loads and such, and a lot of labor and all sorts of other reactions. But you can start to look at overriding that for a short period of time, and for a limited amount of time, you might be able to, say, hit a few peaks and then go ahead and ramp back down. You allow your cooling systems to go ahead and recuperate and then ramp up when needed from there. But overall, they probably did a lot of smart moves in order to prevent a more longer extended downtime. In the west of the United States, California specifically, there was an intense heat wave that happened and started to just broil basically the southwest United States. And of course, everyone was encouraged to go ahead and slash their energy consumption and raise their temperature on their thermostats in their homes to 78 degrees Fahrenheit or higher. Okay, that's well and good, but what about the data centers? What are they doing? And they can go ahead and start to do the same thing. They can start to operate. Hopefully they're operating much higher anyway. But the overall consumption of electricity was starting to get up there where they were worried about these rolling brownouts that were starting to happen. Now, they had these as kind of a flex alert. And overall, what I was looking at is there a flex alert that was telling the data center operators to go ahead and fire on their generators for a certain period of time or a peak use time? I was not seeing anything and did not see anything overall for that. So they might have been just operating as per usual as far as their total consumption on electricity. So we're not seeing any peaks, but we're also not seeing any data center failures due to those heat waves. And if you haven't been following when that's been happening, they're looking to send out these alerts to say, please limit your energy consumption between 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. because they're losing a lot of solar power during that particular time. And because of that, they can't support the amount of those late afternoon hours where everybody's firing up their air conditioners. And that starts to increase, and especially as people return home and try to cool down their homes. Now, we were talking about 104 degrees Fahrenheit in the UK. In California, we're looking at temperatures going up to 116. So you have to realize that most of the data centers are not designed around that, even at their extreme temperatures. And they're probably not designed around that for a prolonged period of time. They might be able to achieve that, but it can stress out the equipment. And if you don't have a well-maintained data center, you're putting yourself even more at risk because the equipment might not just be able to handle that capacity either. Also, the excessive heat is a leading cause of weather-related deaths in the United States, and I was looking to see if excessive heat is the leading cause of data center outages as well, or weather-related data center outages, as opposed to hurricanes or tornadoes or another effect. So more to come on that, but right now there's not a ton of news, of course, reporting on just data center outages due to extreme weather, but maybe there's an aggregated source somewhere that I just have not found yet. Well, on top of all of this, the reservoirs that you might have seen that are used to generate hydroelectricity are also low. So there's that adds to that lack of ability to generate the electricity in a reliable manner. So couple all those things together, and of course that heat is going to hit doubly as hard. And of course I'll be trying to watch out to see what data centers have been maybe asked to go ahead and fire on their generators to try to reduce their load off that total grid to ease the pain across all of California or all of the Southwest. All right, this has been Season 4, Episode 6 of the Green Data Center Podcast. We absolutely love feedback, love hearing from you about anything across the data center industry, so feel free to reach out to us at any time. How? Well, visit the greendatacenterman.com website. Go ahead to the contact form and enter your information there. Also, check out the website for classes on data center essentials given through Udemy, udemy.com. And you can go ahead and click on those because that'll give you the biggest discount that you can get for those classes. We also have links to the latest news as well as upcoming events. So very happy to have that and try to keep that updated from month to month. Those upcoming events, I might not be at all of them, but it is exciting to learn and see what the outcomes are, as well as see who's attending. So hope to meet you at one of them in the future.